So, maybe just to begin, I've talked a bit about your work with Redefining Progress and the topic of this interview. But I'd love for you to introduce yourselves and I guess maybe tell us a bit about your work with Redefining Progress.
Okay, I'll start.
Sure.
Hi, my name is Jahangiran. I am a program associate here at Redefining Progress. And what I do here is I staff a coalition which RP is a part of called the Environmental Justice and Climate Change Initiative. And I'll probably talk more about that in a second, but I'll let Diana introduce herself too.
And I'm Diana Abelera. I also work at Redefining Progress, and I work in between two programs, the Sustainability Indicators Program and the Environmental Justice and Climate Change Initiative with Jahan. And I'm the education coordinator.
Great. Yeah, I was pretty inspired meeting both of you up in Montreal when you gave that workshop with the EJCC. And I wonder if I know for a lot of people, there's a lot of people who are anti-poverty activists or anti-racist activists and environmental activists and whatnot. But it seems like we are all kind of like there's so much crossover between our work. And I wonder if you can maybe talk about what environmental justice or climate justice means to you in your work, and what kind of stuff you're working on with the EJCC.
Sure. Let me start by telling a little bit more about what the EJCC is.
That'd be great.
So the EJCC is a coalition of 28 different organizations around the U.S. And those members are environmental justice community groups, environmental justice networks, policy groups, and some university groups. And we all decided to come together and work on this issue of climate change from an environmental justice perspective. And what that means is that we recognize that, climate change affects everybody, yes, but that it can also place a heavier burden on certain communities. And those are low-income communities, people of color, and indigenous peoples, in a number of ways. Would you like me to give some examples of those
I'd
now?
love to, yeah.
Okay. One example is let's start with an obvious one. For indigenous peoples, say, living in the Arctic, which a lot of people have heard of, that climate change is melting the permafrost, melting the ice up there at such an alarming rate. And the native people up there, they live off of the land in a lot of ways. There's cultures up there still like it. The exact number. It's like 80-something percent of their food for the year is from subsistence lifestyle. So for them, this issue of climate change is really threatening the way that they live and their culture and how they've been living for hundreds and hundreds of years. Some villages have to move. They can't hunt the same way that they used to because there's no ice left. It's like the land is just disappearing from underneath them. For an international example, the small island nations and the island of Tuvalu is sea level rises is taking over the islands basically, and they're going to become the first refugees from this climate change because they're going to have to leave. And those people are native to that island, and so they have a culture like all indigenous people, which is tied to that land. So they're going to have to leave it, and that's a threat to their culture, and also it brings up the issue. So, like, where are these people supposed to go? I know that they ask the government of Australia, it's like, well, when our island is gone, can we move to Australia? And Australia said no. So it's like that question of who's responsible for all this and then who suffers. Diana, did you want to jump in with something else?
Well, I think the fact is it's that climate change, is this huge problem that a lot of people here in the United States don't really have a clue as to what the effects are going to be because it seems like it's something in the future. But what the EJCC is really trying to highlight is that it's happening now, and the people who are being affected now are people who are from low-income communities, people of color, indigenous communities. So we're really trying to bring them to the forefront.
And another recent example that happened this year is, the hurricanes that were in the Gulf Coast, Hurricane Katrina and Rita. Scientists predict that with warmer ocean temperatures and sea level rise, that these, extreme weather occurrences are going to be are going to happen more often and they're going to be stronger. So people can expect to see more of these things. Like, and most of the people who live in New Orleans, the people that were left behind who, like, didn't have a car to get out of the city or didn't have a way to get out of the city because there's no real public transportation, they were all low-income people and mostly predominantly African-American people. And the neighborhoods that are suffering most now that still haven't really been fixed up at all are those poor and African-American communities. That's just what we're seeing right now. You know, on to top it off, you know, those people don't have the money to replace possessions. The government stopped giving them any money or any kind of support. And they don't even have, like, a means to fully engage in this process of rebuilding New Orleans. So they're really missing out. And it's not, and it's because of their circumstances. So in recognizing that more of these events are going to be happening, we recognize that they're going to be hurting these communities a lot more.
Right. So it's not just disproportionate impacts what's going to happen after the effects of climate change, but also exacerbating current inequalities.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of insurance, like low-income people are going to have a much harder time trying to recuperate from climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's an important part you made, like how it exacerbates current injustices and not just kind of bringing new things into the mix. I think that's an important part that a lot of people overlook sometimes.
Matt, can you speak up a little bit?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, me too.
Sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing some of you too, actually. Yeah, I'll talk a bit louder. I was just saying how it's an important part or important point to make that these kind of things just exacerbate currently existing injustices. And I think sometimes that's something people forget about. People of privilege, I know, it's forget to, you know, tend to forget that there are many currently existing injustices. And it just takes disaster situations to exacerbate those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder, let me think here. Maybe for people of privilege who do want to reach out, what do you think are some things to keep in mind to avoid being problematic? Because I know there's a lot of ways to step on people's toes and to kind of end up not really checking your privilege a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of things have you seen come up in your own work that you can share with us?
Well, within Redefining Progress, our mission is to integrate sustainability into public policy and economics. And we try to address the three legs of sustainability, environmental, economic, and social. And really trying to get at all three of them at once is really difficult. It's a slow process because each leg is such a monumentous task. And people who are active in really trying to bring justice to each of these, you know, tend to think of them as one thing at a time rather than integrating mm-hmm. all three into one. So, you know, even within the environmental movement, people are pushing forward in that, and that's been around since the 70s, but in the meantime, the social justice part of it got left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is being patient and listening to all the people involved, and not just concentrating on one thing. But if you really want to have, you know, big social change, that you have to make sure that everything is included.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. There's no one answer and one solution, and this is what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of listening and opening yourself up to making sure that you know, that there unintended consequences aren't going to be problematic for someone else.
Right. And I think that, I mean, what I have seen in my experience working here and working in EJ groups and working with in traditional environmental organizations and then also working to try and bridge the gap between the two is that people need to realize that there are differences and they need to realize and recognize what those differences are. Like Diana said, you know, the environmental movement totally left out people of color and totally left out low-income people. It was from ever since it started, and that's why the environmental justice movement was created. And people need to, like, understand and recognize that history and not just, you know, pretend that
it does, that it's gone now, you know, or pretend that there isn't inequalities and, you know, we're all working towards the same thing, so why can't we all just work together? I think that Diana brought up an important point in terms of resources between these two different groups, is that when she said that a lot of times, in my experience, the environmentals are just going, you know, they want to get as much of a result as fast as possible. And that's not necessarily the best way to work, because if you want to include, you know, EJ groups and communities, you would need to recognize the barriers they face in terms of access to resources, which means access to money, money from funders, money in their community, and also time, because these people are dealing with so many different issues that, you know, they can't just pick up and, you know, put all their time and energy into being on a conference call every day of the week, you know what I mean? Like, and I've seen that, especially when I work with environmental groups, is that I'm expected to, like, be there all the time and be, like, the EJ person to get our issues across. And it's not always easy because we're doing our own thing as well. Mm. And I think what's really important for these privileged people to do as well is to recognize their privileges and then work to even it out. And that means, like, recognizing, okay, maybe you can't put in all your time. Let's figure out, let's slow down the process a little bit so that we make sure that everybody's included. Or, you know, let's encourage our funders to fund these groups, because traditional environmental funders don't like to fund EJ groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And people need to realize, I mean, that change is going to happen from the traditional enviros and the privileged people. They're going to have to make a change in themselves and the way that they act and what they promote and do. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think Diana said it right, is that, you know, we can't give you an example or an exact formula for you to get involved and to help out besides give us money. you know, because it isn't that easy. It mm-hmm. takes time, because there's history there and there's barriers there, and you have to work through those things. And it can't be, like, glossed over. You need to really get at the root problem of things. So let me give you another example. One of the principles of environmental justice is we speak for ourselves. And that means no one else is going to speak for us. And like Diana said, we also say we want to put these communities that are most affected at the forefront of this movement. Now, when we talk to traditional environmental groups about that, they're like, yeah, we get that. We totally get that. Who can you suggest to come speak at our event? And I'm like, you know, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying come and have us make a cameo in your work, and that's EJ, and that's a partnership, because it's not. What it really means to put those groups forward is to involve them in the process and to make the necessary change in the process to allow full participation of everybody. Does that
mm-hmm. No, that's great. That's really, really important, and I like that you mentioned that it's the burden of responsibility falls largely upon people of privilege, just as, you know, the burden of, like, or, like, the need to take responsibility for racism has to be taken, you know, on by white people as just as much as unlearning or undoing sexism in our society has to be taken on by men much mm-hmm. more so than women, and I think that's a really, really important part
right.
to make.
Mm-hmm. And I think something else to suggest is there are these things called the principles, the People of Color Environmental Justice's principles of working together, which was created at the Second National People of Color Environmental Justice Summit. And, you know, I think that when people want to work with EJ groups, they need to start by reading that, because that kind of lays out what we think, what EJ groups think is important in a real partnership, and people really working together. So that's something that I suggest people find on the web and read.
Can you direct us to that website? Which is that EJCC.org?
I don't think it's on a specific okay. website. It's kind of sprinkled all over the place.
Right
but
on.
Just Google it.
For
it's,
sure.
Principles of Working Together.
Great, great.
And there's also the Principles of Environmental Justice, which mm-hmm. was created at the first summit, that people should also read, because that really lays out kind of our principles and what we stand for as EJ groups.
Great.
And that's important to know right from the get-go as well.
Can you share some of the most or some of the more inspiring examples of this kind of solidarity that you've witnessed in your work?
You mean
just different kinds of
partnerships?
Yeah, different kinds of things that you've been involved in where you've seen things actually were done responsibly and appropriately and actually were effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to have to say that nothing has ever been perfect.
No doubt.
But I can see that things are getting better.
Yeah.
Compared to, for instance, I don't know, we work with an organization called Energy Action,
mm-hmm.
which maybe you've heard of,
mm-hmm.
Which is a coalition of 28 groups in the United States and Canada as well, who are specifically focused on youth and campus work, so focusing on college students. And, you know, we see the real importance of working with that group because we also see young people and youth as a disproportionately affected group because we didn't cause these problems, yet we're the ones going to be facing them and trying to solve them because that's our future. And so we first started working with them, last January of 2005. We had our first meeting with them, and that was kind of like, okay, they asked us to come give a presentation on environmental justice and tell us what that's all about, you know, and tell us how they can include environmental justice in their work. And, you know, that experience was good. And everyone had good intentions, but at the same time, we're like, you know, it's just not that simple. And you can't ask us to come and figure out how to include EJ in your work for you either. You know, it's going to mm-hmm. take more work than that. We've been working with them over the past year, and it's taken us a whole year to really figure out a good and effective way to work together.
Mm.
So, which is exactly what I said. It takes time to figure out where their priorities are, where our priorities are, and how our priorities can cross. So what we're doing now is working with them through this something called the Campus Climate Challenge. And the EJCC has a program called the Climate Justice Core Institute. And what that is kind of like a train-the-trainer program in which we get a certain group of our... We hire so many people from 10 different regions in the U.S. and teach them how to deliver our curriculum. Now they're going to go out and deliver that curriculum to communities in their region and get them to commit to doing something. And that could be getting involved in a local campaign. It can be starting their own campaign, getting involved in policy work, writing op-eds, reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. There's a whole list of options there. And so the idea is to really build a movement, to have that keep going and going and going and passing it on to more and more people. We've partnered up with Energy Action through that program because part of our outreach is going to be to campuses, and specifically historically black colleges and universities, working with some of our partners to do tribal colleges and Hispanic-serving institutions or organizations in which there is a majority of people of color students. And working with them, hooking them up into Energy Action, and also hooking them up with local community groups so that when these projects get started, there's already a connection made there between the local community and the university so that, you know, the work that's done is more effective and it's not hurting anyone. It's more collaborative. And so we're starting that year, this year, and we're really excited about it.
Hmm.
So that's one example that I think is really good and shows that it takes some time to work things out, but it's headed in the right direction, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and